Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. Just trust. Believe.
Mabel's Haunted House by Misha. Hi, I just discovered your podcast and I knew I had to write in. I have multiple stories, but I'll start with just a few from one house in particular. I want to preface this by saying that I have always been a sensitive and observant person ever since I was a baby. I speculate that being more intuitive and whatnot may run in my family. For some reason, though, I seem to be especially in tune with different types of energies compared to others in my family. Anyways, these stories take place at my friend's house. Let's call her Mabel. Mabel was my best friend, and still is to this day. We've been friends for 21 years now, and I am now 26. This all happened when I was about 8 to 11 years old, and Mabel is 2 years younger than me. Mabel had a twin brother and two older siblings. They moved into a new house with their mom and dad. I was very close with her, so I was also very close with her family. Her brother's friends and her cousins would often come and visit, and we would all hang out together. When they first moved into the house, I remember that when I walked through the front door, I could sense a weird energy. But I was young, and I just thought, well, this is a new place, so maybe that's why. But it wasn't good energy. It was creepy. I was at Mabel's house a lot of the time, and whenever I stayed the night, I would always feel like I was being watched. It made me scared. I remember looking out the windows to see if I could see anyone out there, but there wasn't. One time, I was so adamant that I was being watched that I had her older brother go check to see if anyone was outside, but there wasn't anyone. I was afraid to use the bathroom at night and would have Mabel go with me. The house creeped Mabel out too. We would tell her dad how we felt we were being watched and how the house creeps us out, but he brushed it off. Her mom, however, also agreed that something was weird there. Whenever I would spend the night, I had recurring dreams about people with black eyes. Sometimes it would be a random person, but I also had dreams where Mabel was facing away from me, and then when she would turn around, her eyes would be completely black. At that point in my life, I had never been so afraid of a house. But she was my best friend, so I wanted to hang out with her, regardless of the bad vibes I got from her house. During the day it was a little eerie, but at night was when it was bad. I always felt like there was a scary presence that was just there, all the time. Mabel had a Shih Tzu, and it would bark and growl at the closet in her brother's room, even though there was no one in there. He did it only in that room, multiple times, and on multiple occasions. One day, during the daytime, Mabel and I went into the basement with her mom. The house was made of concrete, and you couldn't access the basement from inside. There was a door outside of the house that led into it. There wasn't much inside, but it was so cold in there. Her mom shined a flashlight around, and there were a lot of animal bones, which was kind of weird. But I just thought maybe some rodents got stuck down there and died. Mabel and I were looking around, and we saw a black trash bag and opened it. There was a Ouija board inside, but we didn't know what it was. It looked cool though, so we held it up and said, "What's this?" Her mom said, "Put that back. It's in a trash bag for a reason. Don't touch it again." I think the previous owners or whoever used the Ouija board, and maybe that's why the house was haunted. I don't know, but I think something got out or was attached to the house or something. Those are all the small things that happened, which are creepy and weird, but there are two instances that stuck with me the most. Mabel lived very close to a convenience store, like less than 5 minutes away, and by a park. So we would walk to the store or go play at the park. Normal kid things. One day I walked to the store with Mabel, her twin brother, and her brother's friend. I was walking a little behind them and thought it would be funny to hide and pull a prank on them. So when they weren't paying attention, I hid behind a telephone pole. I could see them looking for me and calling out my name, and I was laughing because they couldn't find me. Then I saw them all run together in the same direction, and then they suddenly stopped. I remember thinking, "What are they doing?" Then a guy who was riding by on a bike saw that they were looking for me and said, "She's behind the telephone pole." I was given away, so I walked toward them laughing, but they all looked horrified. I said, "What's wrong?" One of them asked me if I was behind the telephone pole the whole time, and I said, "Yeah, I didn't move from behind it." They said that they thought they saw me running, so they chased me, and then I just kind of vanished and faded away, and that's why they suddenly stopped. I said, "Well, that wasn't me because I've been here the whole time." They said whatever it was looked exactly like me. It had the same red hair, build, and even the same outfit and shoes on. It still freaks me out thinking about it. All three of them saw it, and I saw them run and stop. Another instance stays with me. Remember how I told you her dog would always bark at nothing in her brother's room? Well, one night that I slept over, Mabel and I were hanging out in the kitchen, coloring or something. Her brother was a musician, so he would play all kinds of different instruments. He and his friends were hanging out in his room, playing the piano and goofing around. Mabel's dad walked out of his room and told them to keep it down, and they said that they would, but they continued to be loud. He was trying to sleep, so he walked into the room and unplugged the piano and said, "I told you guys to be quiet." We were in the kitchen the whole time. They were quieter, and we could hear them talking because his room wasn't very far from the kitchen. Then after a few minutes, they all ran out of the room screaming, looking terrified. We got up and asked what happened, and they said after her dad unplugged the piano, the keys started pressing down by themselves. They all saw it, got freaked out, and ran out. Her brother was a teenager at this point and wasn't easily startled, so it really scared me. It also confirmed that all the weird stuff I was experiencing wasn't just in my head. Unrelated to the ghost thing, when we were little, we were digging in the backyard and found rubies, like actual uncut rubies. We showed her dad, and he confirmed that they were real. Then he sold them. I kind of wish he would have kept some for us, but maybe it's better to not have anything that came from that house.
I Woke Up in a Slightly Different Timeline by Blah Blah Bay. A little over a week ago, I woke up in a slightly different reality. Slightly becoming increasingly debatable as things go. It's a reality that was different than the one I used to be in. This all started when I was coming home on a Thursday night after being out with some friends. I was completely sober. I was coming back home and had to find parking in Brooklyn, which, if anyone knows anything about late-night parking on a Thursday, it's a nightmare. Given the neighborhood I live in, there's street sweeping Friday mornings, so basically, I was trying to find parking where I wouldn't have to get up the next morning and move my car. Given that it was really late at night, there weren't any non-street sweeping spots open, except a potentially risky spot near a fire hydrant, not blocking it, just closer than I'd like. I started to pull in there, but a second later I decided to keep looking a little while longer, so I pulled back out and circled my neighborhood several more times before giving up and coming back to that same exact spot. I figured I could squeeze close enough to the car behind me that I could get away with it. The reason I mention this, and why it's an important detail, is because I got out of my car 3 times to check out how much clearance I had between me and the car behind me. I left a few inches, and given that I had gotten out several times, I knew that the car behind me was red. Anyway, I finished parking, walked home, and went to sleep. The next day, I was walking back to my car, just a block away. I knew I was right after the fire hydrant on my right-hand side, but something strange happened. I saw my car and noticed that there was now a different car behind me with ample space between us. Now, this wouldn't make sense because the car that had been behind me did not have sufficient space between itself and the car behind it, unless multiple cars had moved at that point. The other thing that didn't occur to me was that I didn't actually see the fire hydrant when I walked back to my car. I just saw my car, no hydrant. And there was a car parked in front of mine, which means that if I had somehow overlooked the fire hydrant in the moment, that car in front of me would have been directly blocking it. But why would a random car risk getting ticketed on a Friday night when there was no street sweeping on a Saturday? Friday nights are some of the easiest nights to find parking in Brooklyn, so it would be completely unnecessary. And there were multiple spots open on that very block, as it was early in the evening. As I mentioned, one of the very first things I had noted was that there was a black car behind me and there was ample space between us, which I thought was weird. So I got into my car and I was pulling out, and I went over this bump, which struck me as odd. As I drove off, I realized I hadn't remembered seeing the fire hydrant, and then I asked myself, why was that car parked in front of me? Why would they risk getting a ticket? It made no sense. And I started getting this really weird, sick feeling in my stomach, so I told myself I was going to circle back around. It took maybe 2 or 3 minutes tops to make my way back, and as I approached the spot where I had parked the night before, my heart sank to the floor. I saw the red car that I had parked in front of, still there at the fire hydrant. The car that had been in front of me when I pulled out was gone, but it was now at the spot where I had pulled out from minutes earlier, as was the black car I had noted behind me. Both were several cars ahead of and past the fire hydrant. I started running through the natural denial process. Even though I'm someone who is very familiar with the literature, this community, and people's experiences with this, as well as Cynthia Larson's work, I told myself, is it possible that in the last 2 to 3 minutes, the black car behind me moved and the red car that I had parked in front of the night before somehow came back and parked in the same spot? And then the car that had been in front of me, supposedly blocking the fire hydrant, also left? No. That doesn't make sense. Of course, that's not what happened. But because I was still in panic denial mode, I was running alternate explanations. Then I remembered that I had gone over a bump when I pulled out of my spot, so I decided to test that again because denial. I started going back into the spot that I had parked the night before. I got as close to the red car as I could, and then I pulled out just like I had earlier. No bump. Then I went to run the same test in the spot I had pulled out of, but had not parked in the night before. I parallel parked back in, and as I went to pull out, the car went over the same bump, just like it had a few minutes prior. At this point, I basically didn't know how to react, and I spent the next 10 to 15 minutes crying because I know where I left my car and I wasn't five cars ahead. There was no way somebody moved it, nor was it broken into. I realized what happened. And I know this has happened to other people, where they wake up and find themselves in a different reality, or they get into a car accident or a near car accident, or take an exit and end up somewhere else. I've accepted it more or less because what else can you do? And no, I'm not making this up. I don't need the attention. I just woke up in a parallel reality a week and a half ago, and this seems like the kind of place to tell that to. So, greetings from wherever I came from.
Stories from Utah by David. Hey guys, I'm writing in with a few short stories. I currently live in Sandy, Utah. My first story goes back to 2003. I lived in an apartment complex in Centerville at the time. My wife was out having a girls' night, so I was home alone. It was probably 9 o'clock at night. It was dark. I went outside to have a whiskey and Coke and enjoy some of the night sky. When I looked up, though, I saw a huge, triangular, alien spacecraft. At first, I thought it was just a star, but then I recognized the triangular formation, and there were actually lights on this thing, which just blew my mind. It was also quiet and moving so slow. I would say centimeters, it seemed like, at a slow rate, and I couldn't hear the object. It was also massive. Later on, I was listening to this other podcast, The Other World, and another kid from Utah saw the same damn thing I did. I've always blown it off because Hill Air Force Base is right up the street, and they probably have some cool secret stuff that I don't know about. Plus, we have Area 52 here in Dugway. So, you know, I chalked it up to Boeing, or one of those companies that have a special deal with the military. Second story. My brother, my wife, and I were walking to my neighbor's house around the block to go have drinks. As we were approaching their house, we looked up in the sky, and we saw these four, what looked like stars, aligned perfectly diagonal. I tried to figure out what constellation they could be part of. As I looked over to my brother and wife, I said, "Are you guys seeing this?" We were all looking at them when each individual star began illuminating a little brighter. Then, they each disappeared, one at a time, until all four were gone. I'm glad they were there to witness it. This next story is insane. We were in Hollow, Utah, camping in my camper. And it was just me, my wife, and my Great Dane Roddy mix, Marvin. The three of us were all asleep in bed, and I woke up to footsteps in my camper. As soon as I heard them, Marvin started growling. From all the paranormal stuff I like to consume, I realized I should just not acknowledge it, and it will go away. So that's what I did, and the footsteps stopped. Marvin went back to bed. It was weird, though, because the door to the camper was still locked. No one got in. Here's my last story. My wife was driving us home after a concert, and I started taking off my rings, bracelet, and watch. My hands were all bloated from drinking. As I was removing things, I dropped a ring that belonged to my wife's father. It was his wedding ring. It fell down the tiny crack between my console and my seat. Not good. It's also not a car where you can easily retrieve things from that area. You have to physically remove the seat to get between there. We both saw it fall down there and tried looking all around for a way to retrieve it. Well, the next morning when I went to get my tools, the ring was sitting on my bracelet, on the seat. I figured it was her father being like, "You dumbass." Anyway, if you guys want to go to Skinwalker Ranch, I'm in. Let me know. I'll go in machete a-blazing with you.
I Still Don't Know What Followed Us Home by Individual Grade 6138. My wife and I were reliving this crazy memory from just 5 years ago. We needed to put it out here on the internet to see what everybody else thinks. Was this something paranormal or just a psycho messing with us? 5 years ago, we drove down to this tiny rural farm town for my brother's wedding. I was the best man, so missing it wasn't an option. But years before this, I was in a terrible car crash, so I have major driving anxiety. Surprisingly, the drive down there went completely fine. We checked into our Airbnb, which was an isolated house right off this dirt road. It had a massive bay window that looked straight out into the empty farmlands, which already gave off this very creepy vibe. The wedding itself was great, but we ended up leaving early, before the dancing and late-night stuff started. We went to bed early and both woke up at 4 a.m. I told my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, that I felt good enough to drive us back home right then. That way we could grab some breakfast and just get out of there. It was freezing, maybe 40 degrees, and pitch black outside except for a few random streetlights miles apart. We got in the car, turned on some light music, and pulled up Google Maps. I found a route through the country roads that was actually quicker than taking the highway, so I decided to take that. At first, my driving anxiety was totally fine. Until we passed the barn. We drove past this old, weathered barn, and a thick haze of fog immediately appeared out of nowhere. It was perfectly surrounding the barn. We drove right through it, and we're talking to each other about how weird and sudden it was. But the second we exited the fog line, a pair of headlights instantly appeared out of the darkness. An old, beat-up red pickup truck pulled onto the road right behind us. As we were traveling down this dimly lit country road, the truck started weaving wildly in and out of the lane. It kept pretending like it was looking to pass us. I slowed down a little bit just to let him go by and get away from us, but the second I slowed down, he slowed down as well. Then he aggressively started tailing my bumper. He kept this up, this cat-and-mouse game, for a solid 20 minutes before he started flashing his high beams over and over. At this point, we had been dealing with this for 30 minutes, and our adrenaline was through the roof. Finally, he turned on his signal. My wife and I felt this massive wave of relief. We came up to a red light, waiting to continue straight. But as the light changed, he suddenly changed his mind and stayed right on our tail. He went right back to his game, weaving in and out of the lane, riding my bumper so close that I couldn't see his headlights, acting like he was going to pass, then swerving like he was going to cut us off and force us off the road. And mind you, during this entire nightmare, the thick, hazy fog never left us. After a full hour of this, we finally hit the main road. The truck suddenly pulled off and rolled into an empty church parking lot, completely disappearing into the dark. So, what the hell happened to us? Was this some kind of ghost truck tied to that barn? Or just a real-life psycho messing with us? And for clarification, the fog appeared when we passed the barn, lifted, then reappeared when the truck showed up. After it pulled off the road, the fog disappeared.
The Man by the Water by Malachi. This happened when I was 16. I grew up in a small lake town, and my bedroom window faced the water. Most nights, I could see the lighthouse about 2 miles down the shore. It had a really steady blink, 3 seconds on, 3 seconds off. I saw it so often as a kid that I didn't really think about it anymore. One night, I woke up at around 2 a.m. and noticed the light looked wrong. Instead of the usual pattern, it was staying on for about 4 seconds and then off for about 2. I remember sitting up because it bothered me so much. I've never seen the pattern change. Then I saw someone standing on our dock. It was a man, and he was facing the water. He wasn't moving at all. He had on a long coat, which stood out to me because it was July. I didn't recognize him. I also didn't feel terrified at that moment, even though I probably should have. I mostly felt confused, like I was seeing something I wasn't supposed to be. I watched him for maybe a minute. He never turned around or looked toward the house. He just stood there at the end of the dock. All I could see was that he had on what looked like an old-fashioned wool coat, or maybe a pea coat. Eventually, I got tired and went back to sleep. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I was 16. It was in the middle of the night, and I guess my brain didn't fully process how strange it was. The next morning, I told my mom there had been a man standing on the dock super late at night. She looked concerned and asked me what he looked like and what he was wearing. I described the coat and said that I couldn't see his face. She looked really unsettled and didn't say much at first. Then, she showed me an old photo of her uncle. He had drowned off that same dock in 1958, before I was born. She couldn't find a picture of him wearing it, but she said he often wore a coat very similar to what I described. She never told me about him drowning, because she didn't want to scare me and my sister when we were younger. She also didn't want to make the dock seem like a place we couldn't have fun. I don't know why the lights were acting weird that night, but it all seems like too much of a coincidence to have not been my uncle.
Time Traveling Hair Straightener by 89. The bulk of this story revolves around a hair straightener, and it's absolutely bizarre to me. My niece and her friend, 16 and 17 years old, stayed overnight with me and slept in my son's room. They left the next day, which also ended up being the last time I ever saw someone I was seeing. The situation ended in a baffling way, and he's still lurking in my life, but hasn't apologized. That's confusing, but I'm wondering if that day I jumped timelines, and maybe this is why I don't understand what happened. After my niece left, she texted me to let me know that her friend had left her hair straightener and a couple of other small items. Mostly, they just wanted me to find the straightener. We live in different cities, but I visit my nieces every month or two. I found the straightener in a colorful case on my son's bed. I very, very distinctly remember seeing it there and putting it aside on a bookshelf. I remember seeing it and picking it up. I'm pretty certain that I put it on a bookshelf, but to note, I never remember seeing it in my house after that day. About 2 months later, I was going to their city and looked for the straightener. I searched the house, but I couldn't find it. I assumed one of the kids had moved it. I felt bad, since the friend had been waiting and my niece had reminded me about it a week prior. I saw my niece and I told her I was sorry I couldn't find it, but I was sure it would show up. She said, "Actually, and this is so weird, Amber just found it in her drawer a couple of days ago." All three of us were confused. I hadn't been back to that city since, and the straightener hadn't shown up at her friend's house until 2 days before I came to visit. My understanding is that this is not the place that she typically keeps it, but she had definitely been in that drawer since leaving it at my house, and it just suddenly showed up there. This was around the same time that I would have been looking for it to pack it, which is also weird. Every time I recall the image of it sitting on my son's bed in that colorful case, I get chills. How did it end up 2.5 hours away? Also, it's the timing, with that being the last day I saw my ex. Was this a coincidence? I don't know. Do you want to go to the feedback?
Let's go into the feedback.
Perfect. Nikki left a response to this old comment on an episode from last year. So the original poster made a statement that we actually responded to. It was Robin, and they said, "Andy, part of the Mandela effect conspiracy is that some of the quote-unquote corrections were planted online to gaslight us into believing our false memories."
Everything online is a psyop, let's face it.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. In response, Nikki recently said, "Now, what about Richard Simmons never wore a headband? I will prove that so wrong."
I don't remember a headband, personally.
Me neither. Not at all. I have yet to see any actual Mandela effect theory get proved wrong. Like, there's never any real evidence. It's always hearsay. And I'm not trying to, like, dog on you guys, because I totally get it. I want this to be real too, because it's a cool theory. And it makes sense that you would think that he wore a headband at some point, because he always wore those workout leotards and he was, you know, sweating to the oldies.
Goes with the look.
It goes with the look. So it makes sense that you would remember it like that. However, I never remembered a headband just like you. And specifically because I remember his big, beautiful head of fluffy hair. It was just perfect round microphone cover shape on his head. And, you know, it was unaltered by a headband. If a headband were on there, he would have like that weird figure eight shape on his head.
Yeah, like we do with headphones.
Yeah, right now.
Right now. As far as explanations, though, like I'm not totally convinced they are or are not some weird time slip thing.
Mm.
But a good explanation, a popular one that we can all kind of, I guess, agree on maybe, is in Star Wars, the whole "Luke, I am your father," not a real thing. Almost everyone can hear it in their head. Mm-hmm. It's been quoted that way for decades, parodied and referenced across pop culture, that whole thing. But it's never said. The actual line is, "No, I am your father." So why do we have millions of people confidently remembering the quote as it never existed? So either it has been collectively reshaped over time, your explanation, or it's just another crack in the timeline, paranormal explanation.
Even I remembered it as "Luke, I am your father," because it makes sense independently. But in context to the conversation, no, it absolutely does not make sense, because he's responding. His response is, "No, I am your father." It wouldn't make sense for him to say, "Luke, I am your father."
Right.
Really, when I think about "Luke, I am your father," immediately all I think of is that scene from Tommy Boy.
I think of Austin Powers, too.
There you go. Everybody said this so that you get the reference. Otherwise, you're just saying, "No, I am your father." That's not a good reference. What are you referencing?
Being a daddy. That's it.
Yeah. Everybody remembers the Monopoly guy with a monocle. He doesn't have one.
Yep. Gets regurgitated enough times and it becomes the actual canon truth that we all remember. But nope. Fun, fun, fun. So in episode 238, actually, that was the last episode. Wow, everything flies by. Mary says, "When dogs eat things such as the concrete incident or rocks, it's a condition called pica. The owner should have the vet check that out." Definitely. Rest assured, though, it usually is just some sort of behavioral thing. Maybe it's anxious or bored, but there is some stuff that could possibly occur more physically. So either way, you should always take your furry little thing to the vet just to be safe. As for Katie, though, that could be something to look into. It seems like your dog is fine, but better to be safe than sorry.
I want to pronounce it pica, but pica. I don't know. What do you think?
I believe it is pica because I've heard it before, but it could be a Mandela thing. Maybe I heard it wrong and I'm just reinforcing the wrong thing.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of pica because of Pikachu. Let's get into some stories.
Let's get into it. How about the different timeline story? That seems a little relevant.
Yeah, I had some weird stuff this week, and that's exactly
how it should be.
Yeah, right on brand.
Yeah.
So there are a few ways that I tried to debunk this. You know, I attempted. I wanted to, because it just seems like a case of misremembering.
The car that got moved?
Yeah, exactly. If this story did, in fact, occur exactly the way that the author states, I can't poke any holes in it. I tried. Did they, you know, misremember where they parked? Probably not. They got out three times, according to the story, to check the clearance, and they could recite the scene in detail. They remembered everything. So that kind of throws that out. Then I thought, did somebody maybe move the car? But there weren't any signs of a break-in, and the car was functional. So obviously, it, you know, nobody broke in, nobody stole anything. Why would they move the car? And that also doesn't explain the fire hydrant just disappearing entirely. Somebody did bring up on Reddit that the car could have been moved because some cities allow like demolition companies to move cars when needed. But this took place in New York City, where apparently this does not occur. That's not allowed. And finally, the last thing I could think of, I made a note here, was did they park on the wrong block? Because I've definitely parked in places where I forgot where I parked. I live in an urban city, it's going to happen. But I don't have anything here. I wouldn't call this a timeline shift. They did the bump test. That pretty much ruled out parking on the wrong block. But it does seem like a smaller run-of-the-mill glitch. I know the author said that they started crying when they realized what really happened. I think they really bought into the idea that this was some kind of timeline shift and now they're in a new life. But I mean, unless you woke up with a different spouse or in a different year or something like that, it's probably just the same old timeline, but things just shifted a bit. It's like when you put something down and it disappears, then shows up days later in the same spot where you originally left it or you thought that you left it.
Oh,
that kind of thing happens to everybody all the time. It's completely unexplainable, but it's not something to be sad about. I don't think you should carry on with the idea that you're in some alternate timeline. I think this was just a weird glitch.
So the reason I made that noise is because it relates so directly to David's story, but we'll get into that later. But
no, actually, let's jump into David's story. That's great. That's a good segue.
All right. Yeah. David's story. So cool dude from Utah. He wants to apparently hang out and go to Skinwalker Ranch together and go in machete a-blazin'. What say you, Andy?
I'm very weird about meeting up with people, especially when it has something to do with the podcasts. I've met a lot of great, wonderful people through the podcast, but I've also met some people that I wish I hadn't met. I won't bring up names. I won't call people out. So it's a roll of the dice. You never know. I want to give David the benefit of the doubt, though.
I mean, he's an intense guy. I'll give him that. David, you're the guy you would want on your team during like an apocalypse. I can already get the energy off of you.
Nice.
You really are a guns a blazing guy. You take no nonsense.
Hell yeah.
You like to have a good time, but not too much of a good time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. This is just cold reading. But anyway, I don't know what to say about all of your stories because you got quite a bit here, but I guess we can reference the wedding ring especially.
Yeah.
So unlike simply finding a misplaced object later, David and his wife, like, they saw the ring go down between the seat and then couldn't find it, completely disappeared. And then the next day, it's sitting right there by the bracelet, I think. And like he suggested, maybe his father-in-law was like, oh, you dumbass, here it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me of, I don't remember which story it was. This was a while ago. I want to say at least last year, but there was something with somebody's garage, their grandpa's old garage, or where the grandpa used to work, there was like a paint can or like paint thinner or something left out right in the middle of the walkway after they had walked through that it wasn't there before. Mm-hmm. Makes me think of that.
Yeah, and I think it was they thought that it might be the grandfather getting upset at them for putting it there. I don't know. But I do remember like footsteps or something in the ad. It's so weird how we remember fragments of these stories because we go through so many of them.
So
we
many.
We do remember them. We just don't remember most of the details.
All we can do is like, oh yeah, totally. Smile and nod, smile and nod.
Is Utah kind of like a hotbed for all this kind of stuff?
Apparently it is. There's a lot of different stuff around here. I need to, maybe I don't need to maybe I shouldn't even, but I could. The option is out there for me to go exploring and potentially come across some things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe next year when I have some more time on my hands, I don't want to say I'll go looking, but I won't go avoiding, and then we'll see what happens, because I am pretty curious, but I don't want to actively invite anything into my life. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to do a Ouija board type of thing. I'm not going to do any sort of summons or anything like that. But I would be curious to just kind of sit and wait somewhere and see what happens and pass on my experience.
Yeah, I kind of want to go full-blown Ouija board, like invite every bad thing I can into my universe, just because I want proof of the supernatural. I just want it, you know? I don't care. Bring it on.
Give it to me, baby. Yeah.
You know, I keep wanting you, because I know one day you think that you may end up back here near me, at least within driving distance. But I was thinking about, like, where would I want to move to if I wanted to leave California? And while there are a lot of states that I would love to live in, there's one reason that will keep me here forever. And I realized that today at lunch. It's the Mexican restaurants. It's my favorite food. It's the best ever. I've had Mexican food in other states. Everywhere I go, I've tried Mexican food. And you just can't beat it in California, man.
Fair enough. I mean, maybe Arizona could have some good spots, like right by the border, and Texas has some good spots, but not the Tex-Mex style. You gotta get the actual real Mexican food. But I don't know if a perfect state exists. It's either gonna be so overpriced, or the politics are gonna swing too wildly in one direction.
Yeah. Well, enough of the sidetrack, sorry.
Yeah.
Just a thought that I had when you brought up, you know, you being in Utah and me being over here in old California. I want to talk about what possibly followed these people home in that truck.
Yeah.
So this was like a borderline let's not meet story that we got from Individual Grade.
It was.
Yeah. While technically nothing supernatural took place, the high strangeness with the fog kind of puts it into Odd Trails territory. That's why I wanted to include it here.
Yeah.
Especially considering the high volume of mysterious fog stories that we've had recently. We've had a lot. Sure, like this could be some psychotic driver from a Let's Not Meet story or someone trying to mess with them, but the fog synchronization is the weird part. They specifically noted the fog appearing with the barn, then lifting, then returning with the truck before finally vanishing with the truck when it took off into a church parking lot for some reason. And, you know, these are four synchronized events with the creepy traveling fog. That's what makes it super strange and weird. I've never seen fog move like that. I've never seen fog follow a truck. And even the fog itself could be like a weather anomaly, but they're all way too closely related. It would be a wild coincidence if you want to try and be skeptical about this one, which I did try. I always do.
For me, it's just driving in the fog like that. And unless it was some highly provoked road rage incident, nobody's going to be speeding down, riding a bumper in the fog, swerving in and out of lanes, fake passing, like not even the most stupid. There's probably some stupid people that would just to do that. But logically, that alone is not something that I would imagine really happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fact that the fog disappeared with the truck, unless it was loaded up with some dry ice or something and it went into a black hole, I don't know.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. They had like just a bunch of fog machines in the bed of the truck.
Yeah, Halloween, playing Thriller.
Yeah, I was just going to say playing music with, yeah, they're just on their way to like a Halloween party. There could be an explanation, but no, I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, too high risk, not worth the payoff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, on to the longest story that I had the pleasure of reading this week, Mabel's Haunted House by Misha. There's so much going on here. We've talked about the black-eyed kids before and just having black eyes in general. This one's pretty notable because Misha and Mabel both had recurring dreams involving people with completely black eyes. And what I thought was interesting is how they were both people that they were close to. So Misha dreamed about Mabel. Mabel dreamed about her dad, and I wonder if it was some kind of omen, and if it was it from the house, or could it have been, if you want to be rational and come up with explanations, their subconscious just being weird or having a shared type of overlap. Could be a number of things.
I don't like the shared hallucination explanation for things.
Well, a shared subconscious, not hallucination. Like, they were, like, suggestive to one another. Like, Misha shared her dream with Mabel.
Okay. I misunderstood what you're saying. That, absolutely. Yeah, I could see that happening.
Yeah.
You know, the piano keys pressing themselves, that's funny to me because it's such a trope that, you know, would occur in like 1930s, 1940s haunted house movies. This is funny because the ghost tried to do it, but it was unplugged, so it didn't make any noise.
I like that. Maybe the ghost had a sense of humor. Just going to do it anyway, just because, just to show you I can. And of course, the whole Ouija board being found, that perhaps the mom, well, it seems like the mom really knew something was going on. But what I really want to try to digest here is Misha's doppelganger, how all three kids claimed they chased someone who looked exactly like Misha. It'd be one thing if they chased after her and were like, oops, the wrong person, but this person completely vanished. There was another story last week or the week before. It was like an apartment layout where somebody turned the corner expecting to see somebody who they saw running, but nobody was there and there's nowhere for them to go. Kind of like that. But not only that, this was apparently Misha's doppelganger. If only one kid had seen it, maybe there'd be an explanation, but for all three to see her and think it was her, only for her to disappear, pretty wild.
Mm-hmm.
Last thing is Mabel's dad selling the rubies they found. Not good. Not good.
Not good.
You should have at least given them some money, but I wonder if that would carry some sort of residual juju, like dirty money or being an accessory to a crime. Maybe bad energy has its own degree of separation, you know? Family curses, those are a thing after all.
Oh yeah, I always like to err on the side of caution when it comes to like dirty money or something like that. I don't like it. Like, even if I find money on the ground, I'm finding somebody who it might belong to. I'm asking around. Like, there's something wrong about just taking something because you see it. You know, the Uncle Scrooge thing. I don't like it.
Yeah, no. Always try to find the owner. Unless it's like a whole ass quarter sitting on the ground. I'm going to take that if nobody else is around on the sidewalk. Sure, but like a wallet or like a wad of cash? Yeah, no way. No, get that away from me.
Well, hey, man, we got some good stories this week. If anybody else has some good stories, make sure you send them in to stories@oddtrails.com. Make sure you sign up for our Patreon to get ad-free versions of all of our episodes at a higher bitrate at patreon.com/oddtrails. And check out the new episodes of my other podcasts, Let's Not Meet and the Old Time Radio Cast. See you next week. Stay safe.
Peace out.
And the ghouls disturb you, darling.